All right, welcome to another episode of Complimentary Pieces. I am the host, Dylan Sage. For this episode, we're going to talk about somebody that, living in Oregon, I feel like a lot of people are going to have some very, they're going to be opinionated about him. And that person is Khalil Ware. He's a 7 foot, 210 pound center from Little Rock, Arkansas. And he is a sophomore. According to ESPN, he was a top 8 prospect in the class, and that was last year's class. He is a sophomore. His first year, he played at Oregon, University of Oregon. And since I am based in Oregon, you know, people have a lot of opinions about him. So as a freshman, Khalil played 35 out of the 36 games for the Ducks, making 4 starts, averaged 6 points, 4 rebounds, and 1.3 blocks per game, with a shooting percentage of 45 from the floor, and 27 from the three-point line, and shooting at a 71% clip at the free throw line. I would like to stop here and mention that Khalil Ware came to Oregon, and he was supposed to be a one-and-done guy, top 8 five-star recruit. But as the year went on, his first year at Oregon, he kept dropping down mocks, kept dropping down consensus boards, mock drafts, fan sites, till he wasn't really on any mainstream boards. People kept saying it was a lack of motivation. They talked about his motor as well. When I watch the Indiana tape, I'm not really concerned with the motor. But because it's been such a story of his motor, his motivation, I have to make people aware of it right here. But I really truly believe that draft is all about positivity, because even if a prospect isn't perfect, if they can change one thing, you know, it drastically improves their life, their ability to provide for their families. So I think of this as a very positive time, and I want to talk really about the positives in, you know, what his game is. But he wasn't a Dana Altman, who is the head coach of Oregon's recruit. The person that actually recruited Khalil Ware and developed a chemistry with Khalil Ware, Chris Crunchfield, he developed it and was an assistant coach at the time of recruiting. He got hired when Khalil Ware actually came in. So the person that recruited him was gone. And he's in this strange place in Eugene, Oregon. And he's a really introverted person, according to a lot of reports saying he's really shy, he's really introverted. So I imagine the being in the coach's doghouse, being a really long way from where you grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, being in Eugene, Oregon, it had to affect him. I just don't think Dana Altman got the most out of him to make him be a, you know, one and done guy at Oregon. I mean, as an evaluator, when I watched Khalil, it was like, oh, he's obviously talented, but he just doesn't fit with the Eugene scheme. So as his freshman year ended, he transferred, and a lot of people assumed he was going to go to Arkansas, but he actually went to Indiana. And we talked about Indiana basketball last year when we talked about Jalen Hood-Schifino on the Future Fridays. They do a lot of pro-style pick-and-roll offense and do a lot of drop coverage pick-and-roll defense. And Trace Jackson Davis, who is a Golden State Warriors now, one of the best rookies in the class, just left, which left an open spot for Khalil Ware to just take and be a part of it, be a part of that Indiana basketball. So let's talk about Khalil Ware in an offensive context, because I think, like, obviously he is a pretty good defender in certain ways, but the offense is really what's going to put him on the floor and what's going to keep him on the floor. His paint offense is pretty, like, he's shooting 63, or not shooting, he's dunking 63 out of 68 dunks for a 92% dunk percentage. I believe in that ability to dunk the ball. I think that he does it with a lot of aggression and power. So I think that's a transferable skill of being able to dunk it in paint, in the paint, where there might be crowded bodies. What I really don't believe is in his post offense without putting dunks in it. He scored at a 63% clip, which honestly seems decent. But there were times where he was just playing against people that were significantly shorter than him at 7'1". He's going to be a lot taller than a lot of college basketball players. So he was easily able to score at a really high clip against them. But there was a game where he played against UConn where Donovan Clingan absolutely had him in hell trying to, you know, score in the post using the same moves that worked against a 6'7 guy against a 7'2 guy. He got stuffed like consistently. So when we watch with, like, you know, legit centers, the shot's not missing forward or back. It's missing left or right. So it was really bad misses. So I don't feel like the paint touches part of his paint scoring is really going to be transferable, because the only way it's safe, or I feel it's a safe 2 points, is if he dunks it, if he slam dunks it. But I think he could be a really, really scary rim-running threat with Scoot Henderson. Like, the hands are really good. He's hitting at a 92% clip. If he can get the pick and roll game with Scoot, or whatever point guard actually drafts him, I think that can be a really nice form of offense for him to score in the paint. Because, you know, you look at the college game and it's a lot of center based in the paint trying to do what it does to score in, like, the short distance. But really, I just didn't feel safe with him trying to do any post-scoring stuff. So, obviously, I don't feel good about the paint when he's actually trying to do a post move. But I think his long-range shooting could be his swing factor. He's been shooting at a 45% clip from three, mostly on catch-and-shoot stuff. But the diversity in which he scores off the catch-and-shoot is pretty impressive for a guy that's this tall. Because I see him in spot up, obviously the spot up shot, you know, pretty simple. You're ready to get the ball. You're ready for the ball to be in your shooting pocket and score. But then he can do pick and pop stuff. He has a really nice turnaround jumper in, like, the midi. Like, I believe in the shooting, and if he can continue to be that shooter, it unlocks a lot of potential. It's a really nice ceiling raiser. Like, it's tough for a 7'1 dude to look as pretty as he does when he's trying to shoot the ball. So I believe in the shot. I really think if he can develop the craft of being a competent shooter, he could really be a nice threat. I really do see the potential of him as a passer as well. Indiana, and I think I'll complain about this later, but I don't think they gave him the ball enough this season. But when he did get the ball, he made, like, one or two really brilliant passes a game where it was just like, oh, I didn't know you had that in your bag. He had an almost positive assist to turnover ratio this year. For a long time, it was a positive, but I think at the later end of the year when they were just doubling him, he gave up some turnovers. I don't really see him as a playmaking hub like you think of Joker, you think of Sabonis, you think of Alperen Sengun. But I think that he can do dribble handoff stuff, do connective passes. Like, if he's in the high post or on the three-point line, he catches it and just instantly passes it. You know, like, a lot of people talk about the drive, pass, pass type of plays. I absolutely think that he could be a connective piece into that pass, pass, shoot type of thing that people talk about. So if he continues to build on that offensive game, he's going to scare defenders with the catch and shoot abilities. And when they overcommit to him at the catch and shoot, he can get to the hoop and just dunk it since he's so good at that. Or he can run pick and roll, and instead of, you know, popping out, he rolls hard to the basket and can catch lobs, and it can generate a lot of easy points. Obviously, that shooting has to be legit, but is that, like, a good percentage? I just don't see it as, like, a, it's not a guarantee. I guess he is still a in theory shooter, but I think the theory is pretty, pretty nice for him to be a really nice offensive piece. So defensively, he's been the main Indiana big man. looking at the stats, they seem kind of a bit above average defensively. They ran that drop coverage, which means they kept Khalil on near the hoop so he could, you know, stop dribble penetration to the hoop. And he had really good block numbers. So he did a fantastic job of running drop. They didn't really go zone. They didn't do anything else where he was put into any other position besides the drop coverage. But if he can show versatility in his defense, I think it opens up the potential suitors that would like him. Like right now, the Blazers run some drop coverage, but they also like to change it up a bit. So what worries me about him being in a more aggressive defensive scheme where you hedge out and potentially try and scare the ball handler into picking up the ball and making a pass and making them start their offensive possession over again is I don't really know about his foot speed laterally. I think he's really athletic vertically and forwards and backwards, but I don't know about the perimeter defense, because really Indiana was just so drop coverage heavy that it's tough to really know, hey, can he do it? With what I've seen today, I don't think Khalil Ware can, as well as he can effectively do drop coverage defense. His rebounding has been pretty impressive. Like, I think he's a good rebounding center. So it doesn't, what he does, like, there's some bigs in this class where it's like, all right, well, we have to have another center because the current center that is in the draft class can't do A, B, and C. Now, we can say that I have questions about his ability to play a more versatile scheme defensively. And yeah, that's cool. That could be the case. But I think that he has more juice to do like defensively versatile stuff instead of like a Zach Edey or that type of center, a flip as well. So he has some defensive versatility and he's athletic. So he definitely has more of a chance of being a true center than, let's say, a Daron Holmes or a PJ Hall, who I don't think actually is a center, but you know, he's more true center, but he has some stuff that he can do to help out in the rebounding and, you know, drop coverage defense. One thing that kind of sucked when watching Indiana is their guards really aren't, they're good college guards, but they're not going to be dribble creators or, you know, an advantage creator. So when watching, I was like, damn, if Jalen Huchefino was there, it would make the context surrounding Khalil Ware a lot easier, because then he would have the defense broken for him. Then he can make a decision and go. But a lot of times they really weren't, his teammates really weren't ready to score off of anything that he created. So the context surrounding Indiana basketball wasn't all that great. They did not shoot enough threes. They were one of the worst at attempting threes. And when they did attempt a three-point shot, they were not making it in a lot of the time. So as an evaluator, how much do you give like them credit for being good under bad context? Like, there are certain players like Brandon Miller last year, perfect context for him as a basketball player. And I know Khalil Ware chose to be at Oregon and Indiana. I get that. But I don't know what was promised to him and what happened that failed in, you know, giving him the best way to succeed. You know, like, Woodson wasn't really the best coach in the world either. Like, he's never had elite coaching in his college career, really. Now, there were certain games where I was just like, oh, this is a problem with the coaching staff not putting them in the correct space. So it's something that every person who's trying to evaluate talent has to decide, like, how much do you boost a player up when the context surrounding them is bad? But I've seen him excel in certain situations where the shooting, drop coverage, defense, being a connective piece, being athletic, like, that's all teams want from a center that isn't supposed to be a high usage center. You know, I really do believe that this is going to be, he has to, absolutely kill it in those, the second half of evaluation, the combine, the interviews afterward. And I know he's a quiet, shy guy, but he has to be able to explain to the decision makers of NBA teams what happened in his 2 years college career, and how is he going to fix some of the issues that people might have had from him. You've seen what he can do when he's motivated and he can dominate and shut down a game, but it may not happen as much, or he might need a special type of empowerment from the coach. So again, it only takes one team to fall in love with a player. So, you know, how can he find that one team? We're going to talk about his fit now with the Portland Trailblazers specifically. I currently live in the Portland area, and asking people whose opinion that I respect about Khalil, a majority of them, or if not all of them, have you know, negative thoughts about him from his days in Eugene. So the context of him, you know, returning back to Oregon after the failed experience at Eugene legitimately could be a bad fit. People in the state may or may not have a bad opinion of him because he was so underwhelming in Oregon. So that's one thing he's in. If he gets drafted here, that's one thing that he has to work through, is a lot of people that are Ducks fans, probably are Blazer fans, that have a bad opinion of me. But honestly, like, when I watch him, I didn't feel like we're looking at a guy that isn't motivated and doesn't have a bad motor. So I think, like, on the court context, I think he fits relatively well. People are really starting to realize, and I've said this for about as long as I've covered Blazers basketball, we need to surround this team with shooters to make our best players' lives easier. People are finally starting to catch on about that. So with the Blazers having so many, in theory, shooters, that I think the percentage chance of them actually hitting the shot is a lot worse than Khalil, I think that I'm willing to take a dart throw on the fact that he could shoot at a really nice clip. So I think having a 7-foot dude that can shoot threes and then dunk it offensively would be worth it to have on the Portland Trailblazers. Like, dude's a menace dunking. His shot is beautiful. It goes in at a really respectful clip. And him being 7 foot and having that 40% clip going in catch and shoot situations, you're starting to see that he can be a player that complements everybody. Do I think he's a starting center? Potentially. I definitely see a pathway to it. But he also could be a really nice backup center that gets 2 or 3 contracts because he has all of these skill sets that I think teams covet, with the athleticism and shooting and, you know, being dominant at one form of defense that is pretty popular in the league. You look at, like, Utah Jazz. There's plenty of teams that utilize drop coverage in their pick and roll sets. So I think that he could be a starting level center, but most likely I think that he's a really nice third center. Third center would be a fifth big, potentially. So, but I think that he has to be able to shoot and do really well in those pre-draft interviews. Like, the second part of evaluation with the combine, I think, is going to be a bigger deal this year than any other time. So if he can do really well in that context, I think that's good for him. Let's talk about his comps. So what we're looking at, I try to find players that were pick and pop threats. Now, with the 3-point shot being more incentivized by the NBA and then in turn by college basketball, some of these guys are mid-range shooters, but you know, if it was 2023, they'd be shooting from three instead of the mid-range shot, which is becoming less and less of a important piece in the, you know, schematically in the NBA. I still think that it absolutely should be a nice use of, you know, a mid-range shot can be very effective if it's the right person taking it. I think Scoot Henderson should take more. I think, you know, it's still a very useful skill. But Floor, I mean, if you look at the college statistics of his Indiana tape versus Myers Leonard's Indiana, I think he went to Indiana. He went someplace in the Midwest. I should know that since he was such a long-standing Blazer. Oh, I think he went to Champaign, Illinois. I think he was in Illinois, not Indiana. But I think that before Myers put on all of this weight and strength, he was more of a bouncy guy. So I think of the floor as kind of a Myers Leonard before he became more of a bigger player. I think Jalen Smith of Indiana, he had some really nice moments this year and previous years. I thought of him as a lottery guy when he came into that draft. Maurice Spates is an option. Obviously, he's one of those mid-range guys that if it was 2023, he would be shooting threes instead of mid-ranges. Adrian Payne, I think, is also a comp, rest in peace. And I think a ceiling of a Miles Turner could be a pathway. Now, I'm seeing a lot of Jared Allen, and I don't see Jared Allen spacing the floor, and I see a LaMarcus Aldridge, but I think that Khalil is more of a center, where I think LaMarcus is more finesse. I'm not seeing in all of my time watching LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't think, oh, damn, he's in a blammet. No, I think that he's going to hit a mid-range jumper and be more finesse than, you know, looking at what Khalil can do. He was dominating the paint. Yeah, he was shooting threes, but the team in general wasn't shooting that much. So, you know, the shots that he did take were really needed. You know, this one being an Oregonian, this one's going to be a difficult one to convince people to really, you know, champion. There's so much negativity. I wouldn't take him with the Blazers pick or the Warriors pick, but if the Blazers happen to get a pick in the 20s and Yves is off the board, Klingon's off the board, Edie's off the board, Alex Saar's off the board, and we need a center, I think Khalil Ware would be the next best one, and I think that he is deserving of a first-round pick. I just would prefer it probably not being the Portland Trailblazers giving him that chance, because I think he deserves a fresh start with whatever team drafts him. But I think that, like, on the court, he would help the Portland Trailblazers pretty consistently with a lot of the things that they need. This isn't going to be a one-year rebuild for the Portland Trailblazers. I think it's going to be a multiple one. So if you can hit on a guy in the 20s or 30s, I think it helps a lot with the rebuild. This podcast or this YouTube, wherever way you're watching it, is brought to you by Odd Shopper. They give you the best statistics and ways for you to make smart bets. You can see, like, the true winning percentage, the true odds. You know, sports books really like to push the overs, and they, because you want to see people succeed when you make bets, you want to see the person that you're betting succeed and to go the over of what is expected. But to win the most money, it's been shown that if you go unders and you pick the right bets for wherever you're located, you're going to make more money playing smart than playing with your heart. So Odd Shopper gives you access to all of their tools. If you are into sports betting, Odd Shopper is a really great resource for you to use to make better, smarter picks. So thank you to Odd Shopper for sponsoring this podcast. Thank you personally for listening to this podcast and giving Khalil Ware a chance. So thank you. We'll be back. I know Holy Backboard is going to do a podcast on Zachary Richesse. I don't know who I'm going to talk about next. It could be we're going center, center, center with Deron Holmes. I have to talk to Ryan Buchanan about that. Or I could talk about Melvin Ejinka, who I've been really, really impressed by as a catch and shoot 3-point defensive guy. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back very soon with more content. So thank you. We will be back soon. And stay safe out there. Peace.